Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 111 of the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson from Cold Essie, and this is Mark Bolitnikoff from Contract DTG.
And First Amendment Tees.
And
my custom t-shirt.
Yes, okay. So, Mark, if you don't know Mark, you should really go back and listen to episode 86, where he did a thing for us on, what was it? It was what success looks like in DTG printing. And I'm going to ask Mark to share his story again with us in just a minute. But you're not seeing Mark Vila today because we figured this time two Marks were enough. And that last time we had three, it just overloaded the podcast first. So we're not going to do that again. So, Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about your business and how you got here?
Okay. I've been a long-time Cold Essie customer, like 10 years.
Yeah.
We started out with one DTG machine, and then we slowly added machinery after that. We also, we were just a funny t-shirt website, and then we became a local store, and we became a contract printer with the Contract DTG, and then we have a online custom t-shirt designer site where you can buy custom apparel. So we've branched out into several areas, and so moving forward, and you know, we pull a lot of different business from a lot of different buckets.
Yeah, I'll tell you, like, it always gets a lot of, because Mark and a couple of his crew are on the Custom Apparel Startups Facebook group. And last week, I think you mentioned that you had just printed 1,000 DTG shirts for an order.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a 1,000 full color digital front picture, a 5 color screen print back that we're actually wrapping up in the next day or so. And then we have another 1,000 shirt DTG order, which is another full color DTG print on the front. And we have two more 1,000 shirt orders coming. But yeah, we've done some large, everyone thinks that DTG is just for one, two shirts. We have a lot of customers that come to us with large volume. I mean, we did a 3,000 shirt order.
Crazy. So, you know, and this is like, I fall into this habit too.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about it, so, I mean, this is a little off topic, but while we're talking about this, how do you make that decision on whether or not to do a DTG print? Because you've got a whole screen print setup too.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. That's bread and butter as well. So how do you make that decision? You got a 5 color on the back and DTG on the front?
Well, it all depends on like the customer's needs. Like most of these, you know, DTG, we're quoting right now a 10,000 DTG full color front and a 10,000 back they want.
Okay.
So
that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's a lot of printing. It's a lot of equipment, you know, that needs to be moving and all in sync and pre-treating areas and products. So it's a lot of it is a customer need. They specifically want DTG because it's softer feel. It will provide a better full color, you know, realistic photo quality print versus screen, you know, because we've even tried to quote some of these screen print jobs, as screen print.
Yeah.
You know, because we have, you know, 10 color auto. So it's, but they want
the DTG.
DTG,
yeah.
So it's obviously, it's a higher cost, you know, in print cost per unit, but the customer typically dictates what they want, you know, and we try to steer them into screen or this, but it seems like a lot of customers, they know about DTG and direct garment printing, and they understand what the benefits are versus, you know, and they're also aware of that, you know, it might not last as long as a screen print or vinyl, but they're very aware of the end quality that they're getting for the print and the gradients and the fades
You're charging a little bit more for the DTG, or are you giving them the same price?
No, we're charging more for the DTG.
So that's just a lesson for all of you out there when you think that you can't compete with the screen printer down the street.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Mark is getting more money on a 1,000 piece order right? People are not like necessarily going for the lowest dollar amount.
No, they're, you know, they're coming to us because they're looking at the quality of the print, you know? So it's just like buying cars. You can buy a cheap car, you can buy a really expensive car, but in the end, what's the result? You know, if you buy a Mercedes versus a Kia, you understand the quality, the workmanship, you know, or the performance or the luxury item.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, customers are paying more for a specific service just because that's what they want.
Cool.
And we've even tried to downsell them and, you know, like, hey, we can do this for, you know, as a six color, you know, full color process. And they're, nope, we want DTG.
Awesome. Okay. That's great news. So how many DTG printers do you have?
Currently we are at 10.
You're at 10.
Yeah.
Okay. And pre-treat machines?
We have two pre-treat machines.
Okay.
Two pre-treat areas. We do it separately. Yeah. So we have two independently pre-treat areas that run pretty much all day.
Yeah. You're always pre-treating.
Yeah. Always.
Okay.
Always. Because those guys are keeping, you know, 10 machines busy at any given time.
Yeah. And you've got a mix of M2s and Vipers and
H2s,
HM1s.
HM1s. Yeah. Yeah. So
those are 10 years old. Those are at least 10 years old.
And they're done. They're, you know, there's issues every day. And
yeah.
One of those things we need to move on from that.
So that's one of the reasons that I want that I'm glad you're here today is because the reason that you're in town is because you've been a customer for us for a long time and you evaluate equipment, right? So you evaluate some of our stuff, you evaluate inks and pre-treats and printers and all that stuff, and you're here to pick up a top secret device,
correct.
Which
correct.
We won't even say
what
kind of device it was, even though you really want to. So that's why you're here, and that kind of brings up the topic that I wanted to get you in front of these folks for, and that is to talk about replacing equipment and upgrading equipment.
Correct.
So how do you know, because you've got the HM1s, like how do you make that decision when it's time to replace a piece of equipment? Let's say with the same piece. Like how do you know when something is ready to get swapped out?
You there's a lot that goes into it, evaluation of, you know, is how efficient is this machine? How much, you know, unattended time versus attended time, meaning an operator running that machine versus this machine, you know, because like say for instance an HM1, you know, which is like he said, 10-year-old technology versus an M2, you know, which is a dual platen setup. Same thing. They're both bulking systems. They're using almost the same exact print head. You know, the speeds are almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things is how, you know, there's a lot. You know, the M2 is a bigger piece of equipment, takes up more floor space, and the HM1s are a little bit more compact, but they need a little bit more time and, you know, and the rips are different, and so there's a lot that goes into it. We look at, you know, how efficient is the machinery, how much are we spending on maintenance and repairs, how often is that machine down versus, you know, a newer piece of equipment, because our HM1s are typically down more than obviously our M2s, you know, because the M2 is such a solid machine, and it's been such a great performer. We've had, you know, we have one that's been one of the first in the first batch probably 6-7 years ago at least, you know. So there's a lot that goes into it. Is you have to evaluate the efficiency of repairs, the efficiency of keeping it running, the efficiency of print time, and you know.
So when you're if you take a look in your shop, is it like, do you keep track of this stuff, or is it just that it gets to that point where, you know, the damn thing is down one too many times?
We do. So for all of our machines, we actually keep a maintenance log. So it has a date and, you know, who performed the maintenance, you know, what the repair was, you know, who the operator that had swapped out, which is typically me.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, we do keep a maintenance log, and we know how long a printhead should last, how long a capping station should last. You know, and if we look at that maintenance log and we look at one operator is not doing the maintenance as much as another operator, and you know his printhead lasts six months to a year versus this guy is, you know, 2 to 2.5 years on an M2 the head should last, then we know that he's not performing his daily duties, his job, his maintenance, you know.
Gotcha.
So
So you'll look at the logs and see that this machine is just, it's dying.
Yes. Yeah. This one, I'm over here every 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, or this one is a stellar. I haven't touched it in 2 years.
Yeah, got it. How about, like, parts availability? Do you ever run into that? Not necessarily just with DTG, but with anything.
Yeah, we do. And that's something that we look at, is the parts availability in the supply chain, whether it's a printhead, whether it's a capping station, whether it's, you know, ribbon cable or, you know, some kind of sensor or something like that. So
yeah.
Having someone like Cold Essie that for our equipment that we have been able to come to and get that supply chain item to keep that piece of equipment running is very, you know, is very advantageous.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So it's tough for us because there are some pieces of equipment like embroidery machines mostly in the past where, you know, at one point, the Pantograms business, which became part of Cold Essie, sold Toyota embroidery machines, which were great.
Yeah.
Then they went out of business. And then SWF embroidery machines, and they had some financial issues, so we weren't able to get parts for them. And that's a real concern when I talk to people that are looking at buying used equipment.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going to get this machine that may be working fine now, but what are you going to do if you need to replace a head or, you know, any significant part? Yeah. You're pretty much done.
And we base that on not only the equipment that we've purchased from Cold Essie, but other, you know, manufacturers in other arenas. We've done the same thing. Is what's the parts availability? How fast can I get it? How close am I to it? You know, if I need something, because I look at everything from a 30,000 foot view versus, you know, someone that maybe is just a little local store that, you know, maybe they're at a 1,000 foot view and they're just worried about, you know, as long as I can have it here within 2 weeks. 2 weeks will cripple me, so I can't have those issues.
Yeah.
So I look at something, you know, from a lot larger scale because of the amount of equipment, the amount of people that I have. You know, if I have 5 pieces of equipment down because I'm waiting on something coming from Korea or wherever, and then I have, you know, 5 employees standing around and I'm paying XYZ, and it's just, that's not a good thing for business.
So do you keep, like, do you keep extra parts on hand?
Yeah, absolutely.
You keep print heads in stock and capping stations on top?
At minimum, you know, 2 print heads in stock at all times.
Yeah.
Ribbon cables, you know, anything. Yeah, ink. I keep gallons of ink and pre-treat. And, you know, I probably at any given time have minimum 20 gallons of pre-treat. You know, ink chips for the H1s and capping stations and, you know, everything. Like, I have to have that stuff ready to go and ready for repair. And each, you know, we even set up all of our machines, and each machine is kitted with their own tools for maintenance, whether it's, you know, screwdrivers and flatheads and picks. And
so you don't have somebody running across the shop looking for a Phillips head.
Absolutely. Yeah. Why would you, you know, screwdrivers are, you know, $20
That's
for a set.
Buy
a good
That's
screwdriver,
great.
Have it there, have it set up, you know, because, again, you have at my at my scope of things, you know, and it does add up, is at, you know, when you have 2 or 3 people maybe not as productive as they should be, or they're looking for something, you know, that is multiplied by, you know, 13, 14 employees that I have that are walking around.
If they're wasting 10 minutes a day.
Yeah, 10 minutes. If you have an employee that wastes 10 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day times my 14 people is worse than, you know, the mom and pop shop.
Yeah.
That's 2. But at the end of the day, you still have to be efficient. And to me, 10 minutes means a lot. I mean, it's a ton.
Yeah, and that parts thing, keeping in stock, and it's kind of a tangent here, but it's just like supplies. And if you'll notice, like, when a bigger business is running well, we never get those orders to have pre-treat or white ink overnighted. You know, which is a huge waste of money.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and the same thing even goes for the more expensive pieces. Like, you know, we sell an emergency kit for the M2, you know, which includes a printhead.
Yeah.
You know, like, so the reason that you get that is because when your printhead goes, you know, which eventually they all wear out, then you're closed until you get a new one.
Yeah.
That's really it. It's like a light switch. You may as well unplug it and go home. You know, so if it's worth it to not be closed for a day or 2 days or over a weekend, then that's definitely something to look at. So when it's time to replace equipment, it's kind of like the equipment is telling you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll tell you because
it's speaking to you. Yeah.
Because the that line gets crossed where, you know, you're starting to realize that it's not holding its weight. The next question that that somebody had asked me and asked you actually is, how do you know when it's time to change model types? Or, you know, you're not changing equipment. I mean, obviously you have the HM1.
Yeah.
So when the next version of the printer came out, you didn't get rid of the HM1.
No.
And get the new one.
No.
Why not, and why would you do that?
Well, the HM1 was just such a solid machine. I mean, it still is a solid machine. It's just, it's now they're just breaking down into the point of, you know, at one point I had 10 HM1s. You
yeah.
know? And they still print good because they're still using a version of that DX5 head, so they print good. But, you know, what we do is even with new employees, so we evaluate them on how they're working, and typically, you know, a new employee starts on an older piece of equipment, but if that employee is a little bit more tech savvy, a little bit more a little faster, we'll put them on, say, an M2 and get a little bit more out of them, or I won't even train them, like, a couple of my newer employees, I really haven't even trained them on the HM1s because we're phasing that out, you know,
right.
and moving to the next generation of equipment, which is important. So it's definitely one of those things you have to look at as far as, you know, you have to forecast the future of your business and where your work is.
So you mentioned in screen printing that you've got an automatic.
Correct.
Right. So
manual.
And a manual. So yeah. so you didn't have, did you have two manuals and you chucked one to replace it with the automatic?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, we started out with one manual and then we were like, hey, let's get two more manuals. And then we got to the point where it was just, we could only, you know, we could only be so efficient on certain things.
Yeah.
So it became that point where we started getting more workload and we had more employees and it was one of those things. Quality comes into play. So with an auto, you get a lot more quality with an auto. So we had to move to that. And then we just phased out, you know, one of our manuals. But yeah. you have to have a manual, you know.
So that was a circumstance where, like, you were growing to a point where you had working pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
They weren't busted. They were still good, but you made the decision because you were...
The efficiency.
Yeah, you were able to do higher volume.
Yeah.
And so did you do that? Did you, like, do some hard math with that? Or did you just kind of look at it and say, well, I mean, this one's twice as fast. You know, it's going to be better.
It was a no-brainer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it was a no-brainer. It was like, you look at, first of all, you can't, in this industry... You have to buy the equipment to quote the job. It's not like other industries where, you know, you can sub things out in this industry, but other industries it's a little bit more easier to sub out things or outsource or something like that. In this industry, for me at least, it seems like you can't quote the work unless you have the equipment.
Yeah.
You can't even play in that arena. And we offer contract services to a lot of other people, and they, you know, they love our pricing, they love our product, but at the end of the day, if they have so much demand for that service, they are gonna buy that equipment, or they're gonna add another machine, or
yep.
you know, or they're gonna add that service to their, you know, to their shop.
So. Yeah. Okay, so we were talking about the idea that you had replaced the screen printing system, even though it wasn't busted, you know, it was just time. There was a superior piece of technology that would increase your speed and capabilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. So we know when you would consider replacing a piece of equipment, and it looks like you would change model types if it was a speed or efficiency, et cetera. So, but you've got to have enough business coming in.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. So it's not just you wake up one day. Like, I had a conversation on Facebook with one of our DTG printer owners who was asking me about changing the ink, you know, to another brand of ink.
We that's one of the number one things we hear. What ink do you use? And I'm like, I use the same ink I've been using for the last 10 years. Like,
yeah.
I use the DuPont Genuine.
Genuine DTG.
And people are like, really? Like, you know, and they question it like I'm nuts or something, but we've always had good results with it, and it's always worked, you know, but we've just had a person, you know, ask us last week. They were like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, took pictures of it, took pictures of our cabinet, like, this is what we use, you know. It's like, you know, maybe your process isn't right, or maybe you're doing something wrong, but you should have great results with it.
Well, and what reminds me of that is that this is a situation where, you know, the owner just had the impression that they could do better.
Yeah.
So there wasn't any math involved, like you just you just talked about. Wasn't any math involved. They weren't getting any customer feedback that they weren't happy with the prints. It's just that this customer got the impression that they might be able to do better, you know, if they switched ink, even though there are all these repercussions.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
supply chain, you know,
diminished support capabilities.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of things. And don't get me wrong, I have tried. I've done it, you know, and if you're not trying, then you won't be successful.
Right.
But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to weigh out the pros and cons. You know, there is cheaper ink, but is it going to give me the same results?
Well, plus, I mean, you've actually labbed out some inks for us in the past that you decided not to use.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and that's a big influence on our decisions, too, is when our customers tell us something's not working or not great and, you know, things like that.
That's why I like working with you guys, because you guys actually listen.
There you go. I'll always remember the red label on the pre-treatise because of you. Because you had a guy that put in...
The pre-treat
instead of white ink. Yeah, that was great.
The labels were those.
They were so close.
Identically.
They were so close. All right. So, how do you know? We talked about replacing equipment, and we talked about changing model types, etc. Let's say that you're looking at a piece of new equipment, because I know that, especially in the DTG world, that you've had the opportunity, like people send you printers to look at.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So people send me printers for free. Yeah.
So, no, you can't do that with ColdSE, by the way. If you're filling out the email form right now, that's not on the table. But what do you do? Like, how do you evaluate a new piece of equipment? Like, let's say somebody didn't send you one for free, but you're looking into one. Mm-hmm. How do you evaluate whether it's something that you're going to bring into your shop?
I've went to shops, and, you know, that were, you know, approved print houses for certain brands of direct garment printing equipment.
Right.
I've gotten free printers to try, you know, for 90 days to see how they are. There's a lot that goes into that evaluation, is because, you know, not only is there a loyalty that I have to where I have been, you know, it's like they always say the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. It's like I have lived that in many aspects of my life many times over. So
yeah.
I'm very critical if I'm going to switch something. So, you know, because if I'm going to switch a piece of equipment, then I know my whole supply chain of parts, repairs, service, availability, everything's going to change. So, you know, but if something performs truly better than what I have, then what is the cost? What is the cost of the ink? What is the cost of the consumable, you know, replacement parts? What is the cost of the waste? What is the cost of, there's a lot of, you know, other machines that we have tried. I don't want to name any names, but a lot of the...
It's pretty much all the big brands.
Yeah, the big brands.
Yeah, it's really pretty much all the big brands.
And there's a lot of waste that goes into those machines that you know, not only the inks cost more, but I don't think they perform as well.
Yeah.
And they're going to charge me three times more for that ink. So not only am I going to pay three times more for it, I'm throwing away 25% of it. So that increase, you know, but, you know, also, what does the machine cost? What is the, you know, what was this machine intended for? How fast is it? How easy is it to set up and actually send a print into RIP and export it to the machine? How easy is it for me to pull that same print file back up and run it again maybe a month later, 2 months later?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the repairs. Can I repair it? You know, do I have to have someone come to repair it? And if so, am I number 1,000 on that repair list, or am I number 20, or is there someone close, or, you know, or do I have a company that can walk me through it? Or are they going to allow me to touch it, you know? So, yeah, how long the warranty is, I mean, which to me, really, a warranty doesn't mean much, but, you know, in most industries, you know? So it's one of those things. Are they going to support me? Are they going to walk me through it? What's their YouTube channel like? Do they have support videos and training videos and tips and tricks?
Yeah.
You know, another thing I look at too is I look in the forums and on Facebook groups and I look at how many people own this machine versus how many people are complaining about it. So, because there's a lot of people that complain about every piece of equipment out there.
Yeah.
And there's, and you know, everyone that has a keyboard feels that they need to be heard for some reason. I don't understand it, but
yeah,
you know, and when I was evaluating, you know, Cold SE at first with the machinery, I have a manufacturing background. So I looked at how was the machine built and what was the training like? You know, was there no training? Was it included? You know, what was the support? Can I call in and know that I'm going to get a call probably that day? If not, you know,
right.
I mean, now I'm pretty resourceful. I rarely call in.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things like, you know, for most new users, my evaluation and theirs is probably a little bit different. And I think being with someone that has a great support channel, you know, YouTube and tech support on the, over the phone or users that are somewhat close to you, I think that's a huge importance.
So do you start with the equipment first and figure out if that is worth looking into? Do you start with
yes.
a manufacturer distributor first? You look at the equipment
first. First thing I look at is I look at the equipment. How is it built? You know, I want to dissect it. I want to look at it. How easy is it to repair? You know, and then I'm going to start digging into what are my costs to operate this machine on a daily basis, whether it's ink cost, you know, repair cost, downtime, you know, replacement parts, consumables that are, you know, some of the brands sell.
Yeah.
You know, we have to put this ink cartridge in for a cleaning solution.
Yeah,
you got to replace this capping station and you got to do this. And, you know, so there's a lot of those consumable costs that they don't really share with you up front, but they're huge for someone like me that has 10 machines.
Yeah.
Am I going to, because that cost just became times 10, or, you know, hopefully by the end of the year, that cost will be 15 for me, because I mean, we're expanding into, you know, expanding at a rapid rate that I need to evaluate all of those costs and then, but again, the first thing that I look at is the machine, is the quality of the print. What is it producing? Is it as soft a print? Is it as fast as my machine? Is it the quality? Is the DPI better or worse? Is it, you know, how does the shirt smell after it's printed?
Because
I do a lot of retail and, you know, a lot of my products go directly into a storefront or a boutique or a, you know, or a shop or some kind of retail setting. So I need to make sure that that thing doesn't smell.
You know what? I've got an off-track story to tell you. We evaluate heat presses all the time. We're always looking for new technology and things like that. And we've returned two because they smell like fish. I don't know why, but we would be using them and we walk around the office and says, is somebody cooking fish today? He says, no, it's the new heat press. So that's a deal breaker. Okay. So, when you look at the equipment first, you're looking at, for a printer, you're looking at the quality of the print.
Yeah.
You're looking at how fast it is and what that's going to make a difference in your business.
Yeah.
Because if the print quality isn't there, it doesn't matter how fast it
is. Doesn't matter, because I have to live up to a certain standard with my customers.
Yeah.
I tell people to call all the time, say, hey, what do you think about this? And I tell them every day, like, I have to offer higher quality than my competitor. So if the piece of equipment that I'm using prints better than a competitor down the street, plus, you know, across the United States, wherever they're at, if my machine prints better than theirs, then I already have an advantage.
Yeah.
So if my inks are softer and they last longer, I already have an advantage.
Yeah.
So, but then you have to weigh out obviously the costs and everything like that. So.
Because if it costs you $8 to print a shirt, it doesn't matter how pretty it is or how fast it is.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
And if you can't repair it or get it repaired, then nothing else matters too.
Yep.
So it really does. Now, cost of operation, you said the, you know, all of the consumables that are not on the front page of a DTG printer's website.
Yeah.
Or any product's website, right? All of that stuff. And you look at workflow?
I do look at workflow. How much space is this machine going to take up? you know, because there are some machines out there that are just massive. So, you know, how many heat presses am I going to need with this shirt? You know, if we're toying with the idea of going to a oven system. So, you know, again, how would I set this machine up? How many of these machines can I fit in a said given space? Because a lot of people think about, you know, a piece of equipment and this and that. But at the end of the day, you pay in a retail setting or wherever you're at, you are paying for floor space.
Yeah.
And floor space is a huge commodity. So so you need to understand that you take up a smaller footprint, you can fit more machines in. If you have a bigger machine, it's going to cost you more. So, you know, but yeah, walls and pillars and electrical, what's the requirements of the machine? A lot of that goes into planning a floor setup.
So yeah.
We've moved three times now. And every time we've done a site evaluation as far as where we're moving, what's the electric like? You know, what's the floor plan? Can we fit our machines in? Can we fit them out the door? Can we fit bigger equipment in if we have to? So, yeah, that's a huge thing is planning to move. It's a 6-month process for us because we need to make sure we have the electric, the floor space.
Is the flow
going to be better? Is it, you know, our whole shop is set up with a flow. It's an in and it comes right back out. So
have you ever changed or bought different equipment based on your floor plan?
No.
Okay.
That doesn't.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a difference. You know, some of our printers, you load in the front and you can program it to take it out the back.
The Viper was a horrible example. We had Vipers and they took up so much floor space. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's not just the size of the machine itself, it's the workflow space that you need around it.
Yeah.
Which works in some places and not in others. All right, so the equipment itself, the cost of operation that includes all the maintenance supplies and how often you have to maintain it, personnel time, and then the kind of support that you're going to get with it includes parts availability of local or regional support, you know, or the ability to get somebody on the phone right away.
Yeah, we've looked at some stuff and a couple of the newer brands of machines out there, they actually have, you know, humidity controls. And if you're not within a certain humidity spec, it dumps ink. It's just dumping ink out.
Wow.
Because it wants
I read something about that on the forums.
Yeah, that's real.
Okay.
That's a real thing. And that's something, like, you can't even control sometimes, you know, I mean, depending on where you're located. Like, sometimes I live in the Northeast and it gets really dry. It gets really cold and really dry.
Yeah.
And we're in a somewhat temperature-controlled building as much as possible. But there are times when it's, like, super dry. And if I was using another said brand, it would just dump ink right out.
Jeez.
And I'd just be paying for all that waste. And it's just, there's just, I can't. It's
and I know there's some equipment that actually won't allow you to break open the printer and do anything yourself.
Uh-huh.
So you'll void the warranty.
Void the warranty as soon as you touch it.
Yeah.
And a lot of those times, again, where are you at on the repair queue? If you're 50 and you have a piece of equipment that's something so small that you could do it.
Yeah.
You know, so ease of working on a machine is huge for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't wait a week or, hey, we're a little busy this week. Now you're going to be a week and a half. Like, that's not an option for me.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad that we get the opportunity to work with you on evaluating some of our new products because, as you guys can see, you know, by the time we're done, you know, having a few people take a look at it. Generally what Coldesi does is, you know, in the DTG world in particular, you know, the DTG Digital, the manufacturer of the M2, is located in Australia, and they sell in Europe, and they sell in Asia and all over the world. Historically, Coldesi has never been the first one to start selling one of those products. Normally what we'll do is we'll let it cook in Europe for a year.
Yeah.
You know, to see if there are any inherent issues after they get out into the field. And
I remember seeing the M2 way before
but I knew
that I needed it, the multi-platin setup.
Yeah.
I was like, I need that. When is it coming? I was bugging for months and months.
It's the same, and it was the same thing with the Viper 2. And you know, it's the way we handle other products as well. We've actually got, you know, two or three different pieces of equipment that are in the field being tested right now in different categories that are available to sit for sale for in other places that we won't let you guys at until we're, you know, reasonably sure that it's going to be a good piece of equipment for you. So I've got your things. What I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of write all this stuff down for you guys that are listening at home and map out the three steps that Mark had talked about and how he evaluates equipment. We'll talk about when it's time to replace, how you know to change model types, and how you evaluate new equipment. We'll put your words of wisdom down. And then, if the equipment that you're picking up today from us turns out to be a winner, then you'll know that it has been through this process.
Yeah, it'll be proven.
And then it'll be a good piece of equipment that we'll be proud to sell.
Yeah, I'm not going to use something if it doesn't work. It is what it is, you know.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. It's got to live up to it. But yeah, I think there's some very good things to come.
Cool. Okay, guys. Thanks for listening. This has been Mark Stevenson from Coldesi and Mark Biletnikoff from contract-dtg.com.
Yeah. My custom t-shirt and first
fat tees. You guys have a good business.
Thank you.